It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here and Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day in your head from Phoenix, Arizona and the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, right now I have on the line Howard Blitz from Yuma, Arizona, that is now in Chicago, Chi-Town, doing the Continental Congress 2009 from the inside. I got you there, Howard?
How you doing, Ernie? How you doing?
I'm more than a wonderful, you know, I'm glad you're doing this for us. You're a good guy. You run down in Yuma. You've been a long time hardcore libertarian, had your own column in the local newspaper there. You have your own business, a State Farm insurance facility, and the whole top upper floor is the Freedom Library.
That's it. You got it.
Well, tell us about Freedom Library real quick, give you this opportunity and give out the website, and then we'll talk about Continental Congress.
Well, absolutely. It's www.freedomlibrary.org. We incorporated 14 years ago with the sole purpose of helping individuals learn and understand the ideas of liberty. And the way we do that is we put on programs from time to time, but the main way we do it is we offer scholarships to individuals who take our 12-week United States Constitution class, and they have to write about principles that they're learning in the United States Constitution and apply them to a current event. This semester's topic is cap and trade, and we're having the individual participants apply the U.S. Constitution principles to cap and trade. And what does the Constitution have to say about cap and trade? Or what doesn't it have to say about it? In other words, does the United States Constitution even apply today? So that's what we're trying to do, trying to make the United States Constitution meaningful in the 21st century, even though it's a 18th century document. So
I know principle is principle, but, I have an opinion, but let's go ahead and find out what's actually going on there in Chicago. Now, the had the election here in Arizona. They, Howard Blitz, I was so glad to see that you were going. And we have Ed Vallejo, he was head of the Ron Paul meetup here during the day. And there's another woman that I'm not familiar with. I've seen her here every now and then. She's a Sylvia Boutier, is that it?
Yeah, Boutier, and she's our third delegate. And this is the first opportunity I had to meet her was here at the Congress. So, and Ed, I met about a month ago when we came up and had a little group meeting up there amongst the delegates. So I'd never really even met Ed, but this is a great opportunity for me to meet the other people in our delegation here from Arizona. Might add, I'm just down the road from my whole hometown of Oak Park, Illinois, Ernie. This is really weird. It's kind of like coming back to old home week.
Have you got to visit some friends?
No, we're not going to have any time to do anything except do what we're doing here.
Well, how long are you planning on being there?
Well, I'm going to be here pretty much the whole time. It ends next Saturday night, but I'm going to leave Friday afternoon, Friday night, so I can be back in Phoenix for my grandson's birthday party on Saturday. So,
saving the country, being a good grandpa. You know which one wins? Being a good grandpa.
You got that right, bud.
It doesn't do you any good to save the country if your grandkids aren't taken care of. The one thing I want to you to give us is, it's early on. They're just getting started, and everybody's got to have their say, and everybody's got their chest out and showing their peacock feathers and everything. But has that started to settle down yet, or are they starting to get down to business?
It's just now, sir. We started here Wednesday afternoon. And it was just the organization where we were to elect the chairman of the Congress. And, by the way, Michael Bednarik is the president of the Congress. and a guy by the name of Dan Gonzalez from Florida is the vice president, and he actually is chairing the committee of the whole. But anyway, Wednesday afternoon was basically organizational. Really not much got done as far as that goes. Yesterday was just what you just got through describing. Everybody's sticking their chest out. Everybody's got to talk. We were supposed to come up with two remedial instructions. Never happened. Finally today, I think everybody's just trying to get used to this whole activity. You know, 105 people here. Not all the states are represented here today. You know, at the Congress, 47 states, 105 representatives, 105 delegates, I should say. And so it's you know, we're just kind of settling in. So actually, today was pretty much settling in today because we are accomplishing what we're here for, and that is to set up remedial instructions to our government officials. And we've done one so far concerning the Federal Reserve and gold and silver and the money clauses. So we've done one. We're working on the Second Amendment right now, and I'm chairing a committee that is going to do something in terms of remedial instructions about demanding that our government officials answer these petitions of redress of grievances that have been put forth and have not shown any response by government officials. So,
well, I'm interested in, you know, you're going issue by issue here. I'm interested in what you say about the Second Amendment. You put like a couple of reallys before shall not. I mean, what do you do?
Well,
like really, really, really shall not infringe. I mean, you know, what is it you're actually doing?
Well, we're saying, hey, we are instructing you. In this case, I'll give you an example. Today, we basically took Ed Vieira's suggestions and we made them motions. And essentially, what we're telling Congress is, okay, abolish the Fed. I mean, that's what we're. That's essentially what it says, and make gold and silver money. Okay, essentially that's what the remedial instructions are saying. Now we go on record as, hey, we've said that. Okay, so we said it, and that's it. Now they're going to probably thumb their nose up at us. Okay, that's fine too. But I think the idea behind all of this is to show the American people that, hey, every avenue is being utilized, every peaceful avenue is being utilized to try to correct our government's unconstitutional actions. That's what's being done here.
So it's kind of like Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse, you be nice until it's time not to be nice.
Well, that's exactly correct. I mean, you want to exhaust every peaceful avenue. I mean, nobody wants violence. You know, we don't need violence. It doesn't need to happen. You know, I am trying to save this country for my grandson, and I don't want my grandson to have to live in some concentration camp or something like that. You know, that's what this is all about, and we're trying to use every peaceful means possible. And the founders gave us a lot of different avenues to work with, but, you know,
well, I tell you, you know, it's one thing.
This is where we're at. So,
well, one thing about you in particular is, you know, give a little bit of your experience. I mean, you've been Yuma County Chairman of the Libertarian Party. You're in
I guess my gig goes back about 35 years, 35 years back to when I went to work for the Bank of Hawaii in their Economic Research Department. A gentleman by the name of Wes Hillendahl was my department head there, and he was a trustee at the Foundation for Economic Education back in Irvington, New York, and that's how I got connected with them, and that's who we send our scholarship recipients. We send them there for a week to learn more about individual liberty and freedom, and I'll tell you something, the two that came back this summer from there, they said, Howard, this was a life-changing experience. That's how they described it. I said, oh, great. This is wonderful. So I'm just trying to raise as much money as I can to send more people back there so they can learn about this. And, you know, the more people that we can get educated about this thing, the better off we're going to be, because then they're going to understand what needs to be done. Right now we are so dumb that nobody knows what question, you know, nobody knows the right questions to ask. So
Well, you know, that's one thing. I want to give a little bit of your bio because, I mean, you're a successful businessman there. I mean, you're like sponsoring the Little League team kind of deal, you know.
Yeah.
You have a regular column. Do you still write a column for the Yuma Sun?
Yeah, I do. It's not a weekly deal because I'm running out of time to write articles, but I get them in as best I can. I know the local radio station is trying to get me on. I don't know. Yeah, they haven't called me back yet. I got to call them back. But maybe I'll get on the radio kind of like you.
Well, I was really happy to know that you're part of this because you're reasoned, educated, well-informed, current event, understand the history, got some skills, and you bring this roundness to this whole issue to where you're going, yeah, no, we need to be peaceful. We need to go do this. We need to document this. And Bob Schultz has been all about documentation of all this up and to what? Well, when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Howard Blitz from Freedom Library in Yuma in Chicago at the Continental Congress 2009 is going to tell us what.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, what's that solution here? Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. It might be, I don't know, independence declaring. I vote that one, Howard. You know, is there been talk any at the Continental Congress 2009 in Chicago, of which Howard Blitz is a delegate from Arizona? Has there been talk of, hey, man, can we just, like, you know, be done with this and get out some parchment and start doing that declaration thing?
No, not yet. No, that's not what this is about. This is all about, you know, making more demands on the government, instructing, demanding, commanding, whatever, however you want to call it. I guess it's kind of like, telling your child when he's not behaving, okay, go stand in the corner. And then we'll see how the child reacts. That's what we're doing. We're telling the child now, okay, go stand in the corner, and then we'll see how the child reacts. And then we'll take the next step, you know.
Well, what would that step be?
I don't even want to think about it, to be honest with you.
You know, well, I'm hip. I know you need to go through what you're doing. I applaud that. You know, but I, you know, there's a, you know, the one thing that, and you've known me as an activist for, probably 15 years.
And
I never bluff. So I'd be careful.
Yeah.
I'd be careful what I say, what I'm going to do, and a lot of times it's just make fun of them. But you know, I never say I'm going to do something that I'm not, you know, already ready to do because they always call your bluff.
Absolutely, and just like any child, you know, you better be prepared. Whatever you tell your child, you better be prepared to stand by it. And whatever we haven't gotten to that point yet. I don't think we're not that step. We're at the step where we're demanding, commanding our government officials to write all these unconstitutional acts and get them corrected. It's not, you know, we haven't gotten to the or else what, you know, that isn't where we're at with the Continental Congress. We're kind of at the same spot where the Continental Congress members were in 1774, where they all got together. All right, you know, King, you're out of hand. So we're going to write a whole bunch of letters, and then they were going to get back together again in May, the following May, to see how their demands came along. Well, the war had already broken out. As a matter of fact, Patrick Henry got up and said, guys, the war's already started. It's already here. Talk's over with. Well, we're not there yet. And I don't know. I don't know, Ernie. This is serious stuff. That's all I know.
Yeah, I'm with you, brother. I just
it does make me nervous. I got to tell you, it makes me nervous because I'm not a violent guy. I don't like violence. I'm anti-violence. but you know, if you get shoved, you know, you shove an animal into a corner,
stuff happens. You know, that's one thing that I want to bring up. You know, I had, reminds me, I had Heidi Byrick. She was special projects manager, blah, 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 with the Southern Poverty Law Center. And it's time for her to come on again. And she's going to be all interested about, you know, this Continental Congress. I mean, they're sitting out in the lobby, you know. They're whatever.
Okay.
They're taking notes. Somebody's something. I mean, they're going to be, yes, these terrible people are here talking about peaceful redress. And I'm going, wow, as opposed to what, you know. So I'm, well, we've had her on the show before, and I have her again. And she was very interested about this. And she asked me, she goes, the deal was she wanted to interview me, and I said I would do it only if we did it live on the radio.
Okay.
And so we had her on, and she asked me a question. I'd ask her a question. She asked me a question. I asked her a question. Sure. And it was an interesting and I think we were friendly terms, but, you know where her drill is.
Yeah.
And I had her talk an interview with, like, Chuck Baldwin and some of these other people that they had just helped with the MIAC report, saying how evil and terrible these people are. And I'm going, you know, it's, I don't think you really understand what's going on. She said, Ernie, I just need to answer me this question. I don't think she thought I'd give her a straight answer. She goes, where are all the guns coming from? I, you know, where is that whole, everybody's buying so many firearms. The records are, like, more than the entire Chinese army is being bought in America in 1 month. So they're going, wow, where did all this come from? Where did the militia, the crazy, where did all this come from? Because she wasn't around 10, 15 years ago. And I said, Heidi, they never left.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, that's what the Second Amendment's all about, is to defend yourself from your government in case it gets out of hand. You know, the founders were very smart people. They gave us tools by which to peacefully, basically, overthrow our government. We can overthrow our government every 2 years. As a matter of fact, next November, we could do this, but it doesn't seem to be working because we keep electing the same people who don't want to support and defend the Constitution of the United States to office, so.
Well, this is my opinion. I mean, seriously, I early on, I've been, you know me, I've been an election guy, election fraud thing since forever. And my deal was this. If they could convince you that your neighbors don't know what's going on, that everybody, you may know what's going on, Howard, and I may know what's going on, but it's everybody else that's too stupid, okay?
Yeah, okay.
If they can convince you of that, well, then you can still have some kind of a legitimacy that you give this election process. What if you finally get to the point you're going, I honestly don't believe that my fellow Americans are that uninformed. I don't believe they're that stupid. I think there might be a problem with the system that counts their expression. And I'm going, you know, because the thing to me is that I need to have confidence in a system that I'm going to participate in. So you're right. This is serious business. It's very serious.
It is very serious. It's a matter of life or death. And, you know, you have a good point. You have a very valid point because you know, a lot of people write, oh, nobody shows up to the polls because they don't care anymore, or what's the word? Well, they just don't care anymore.
They don't want to encourage them.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, I'm not so sure that there's not caring, but there's a lot more people like yourself and like me. I mean, I'm getting to the point, too, where does my vote really get counted properly? How do I even know this? And, of course, with electronic voting, who the hell knows? Excuse me, pardon my French. But a lot of people aren't voting just for that reason. It's not because they don't care. It's because they really don't believe in the system anymore. And now you've taken one more avenue, one more peaceful avenue away from the people to change their government. And that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing.
Now, I remember the quote attributed to Kennedy, I think it was, if you make peaceful revolution impossible, you make violent revolution inevitable.
Yeah, he did. And as a matter of fact, they broadcasted that quote at yesterday's event before Michael Bednarik spoke yesterday. And that's very true. I think Mr. Kennedy, very true statement.
There's a lot of things that he, you know, right before his death, he... You know, we do not support secret societies. We are not for. I mean, you listen to that speech now and you go, what is that, Alex Jones? I mean, you know, it's.
Yeah, right. It's amazing. And, yeah, he had a lot of. Well, he was on the inside. He saw a lot of things that we the people, really aren't privileged to see. And I'm sure it's scared the heck out of them.
Yeah, no. So we have guys, you know, other talk show hosts like Alex and myself and others. We're going, look, man, you only wish it was as bad as we were saying a few years ago.
Honest to God, but you know something? And the lady there from the, what's her name that you were just talking about, Heidi? You know, she's got to realize that more and more people, and I mean more and more average Joe people, okay, are being impacted by what's going on, and they're starting to raise questions. That's why the guns are being bought. I mean, more and more people are realizing, you know, something, there's something going on here.
Yeah,
and
no,
and they don't know what to do.
Well, what about in your area, in Yuma, economics? I mean, my street. I live in, you know, a nice area in Central Phoenix, and I'm telling you, you know, I have people doing yard sales and selling all their furniture and foreclosing on their houses and stickers of whatever. I mean, it's getting bad. How is it in Yuma?
Well, let me tell you something. We are so dependent upon the government between the military bases and all the government programs.
Hey, Howard, they're going to push the button. Can you hold on until the next segment?
All right, one more. Yeah, because I've got about 10 minutes.
Okay, we'll just hold you for a little bit. We'll be right back on Declare Your Independence.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Don't stop me, cause I'm having a good time, having a good time. Shooting star leaping through the sky.
Yeah, we're reaching for the sky here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Howard Blitz from the Continental Congress 2009. I know you got just a minute, Howard, but I didn't want to leave without getting your perspective on this. We're going to have Gary Franchi will come on next week from Restore the Republic. He's there in Chicago. I talked to him a little bit ago. We'll get Ed Vallejo next week after we get a little bit more time. Hopefully we'll talk to you again. And the one thing that I want to say real quick is, Howard, I wanted you to finish up on where the rubber meets the road. It's economics. It's going to come down to people's livelihood and how you're experiencing that in Yuma as a businessman. Give me a quickie, man.
Well, that's true. And really, because of the dependency that Yuma is on the federal government, the impact of the economics hasn't hit quite yet. Not like it's been in Phoenix and all that other stuff. Yeah, we've got a few foreclosures and we got a few of this, a few of that, but the percentage is not nearly as great because of our dependency. It's like the drug addict. You know, he's so dependent upon the drug that he's still getting his drugs, but you guys aren't. But one of these days, when the money goes bad, we're not going to have our drugs either, and then it's really going to impact everybody. So right now, Yuma is kind of hanging okay.
Well, why is that? Yeah, military bases, the border patrol.
You've got the two main military bases, the United States Marine Corps and the U.S. Army Post at Yuma Proving Ground. And then, of course, you've got the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, it's all over the place. So you've got a lot of money being spent down in Yuma. I mean,
I've gone down there. Whenever I go down there, and there's been times that we'll have different media events or something that we're doing for campaigns and such, we'll stay in a little motel, and the whole hotel or motel is filled with guys in uniform.
That's right. That's it. That's why they're building even more hotels. So they can house all this federal government personnel. So,
wow.
And the Department of Homeland Security is huge, and they just got through building a huge office complex, and of course they've got the one inspection station out there on I-8 that I think a lot of people already know about from Pastor Anderson's activity, but the economic impact hasn't been as negative as it has in other parts of the country simply because of the government expenditures. But we all know that government expenditures, we're going to have an even bigger problem in Yuma because as the state goes bankrupt, as the city of Yuma even goes bankrupt, because they're already talking about cutting back services in Yuma for crying out loud. So it's not going to be a pretty picture, and people are going to start wondering, okay, what do we do now? And somehow we, the people, the freedom lovers, have got to be there to fill that void and say, look, we need to do freedom. We need to say it's freedom's the answer, like you keep saying. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? We got to tell these people that we don't have freedom right now. You know, everybody blames the free enterprise system right now for our problems. Well, we have a free enterprise system.
Yeah, when was the last time we had that?
I can't remember. It wasn't in my lifetime, I don't think. But But and that's what we got to keep telling these people. We don't have a free enterprise system. And so I think if we keep hammering it, Ernie, hammering the freedom song, liberty's going to win out. I'm telling you, liberty's going to win out because that's the natural state of affairs in humankind. And I know I sound optimistic. It's kind of like Saturday, Friday night, you drink all night. Saturday morning, you think, oh, gosh, the world's coming to an end. Well, it's not coming to an end. It's just the body's recovering itself. And by Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning, you're feeling a little bit better. And by Monday and Tuesday, you're back in business. Now, the main thing is when Monday and Tuesday show up, we remember, don't drink all night Friday night.
Yeah, but where we're at now, it's like Saturday morning, you got a bad hangover, and your roommate keeps pouring whiskey down your throat, you know?
Well, we got to stop it. We have to stop that.
Are you going to run out of whiskey one of these days? And, that's one thing I know. In the end, throughout these cycles, that's why they call it revolution, just keeps going around.
That's exactly it.
And in the end, freedom always wins. It gets really messy.
It does. I know. Anyway, keep the faith, boss. Be well. Take care. And thank you very much for having me on your show.
Howard, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate the extra time. Thank you.
Right.
Howard Blitz from Continental Congress, 2009, Chicago. Now, you go to Freedom Library. Just do a Google on Freedom Library, Yuma, and it'll come up all over. And what he has done. Yeah. Oh, thanks, man. Do you want to give out your webpage real quick?
Yeah, www.freedomlibrary.org.
Freedomlibrary.org. Thanks, Howard. Goodbye, man. Thanks for doing the hard work. And Howard has been a really good beacon there in Yuma and here all of Arizona. He's been around since before I was getting involved in libertarian politics. And has this guy in Yuma, and he's always has a table at the Freedom Summit. I'm not sure if he's coming this year or not. He usually does. And he gets a table for his Freedom Library. And Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. And what I really remember of Howard is just, you heard him, just calm, cool, collected guy. You go to today's archive and you go in, you'll see a link to his site as a writer on Freedom's Phoenix because we publish his columns that he puts in the Yuma Sun down there. And this is how the people there know him. That's how they know libertarianism. Whenever we have campaigns for office and you run the statewide campaign, like I run for Secretary of State or U.S. Senate or whatever, we certainly go down to Yuma. And he always has television and radio interviews for us, and that's why we need to stay in a hotel or something, or we'll stay at his home depending on what year, because we got to do it 2 days. I mean, it's a long dang ways down there. So it's you go down there and you plan them all for 2 days, and you just do the deal. Then you come back. And you leave him with something to think about. And every month he has different meetings, and he's just a buzz. It's like we have the Freedom's Phoenix workshop here. He has the Freedom Library down there, even before that. And he takes and he funds these people. He uses the money that he makes in his business. He owns a State Farm insurance company there, a freestanding building there, nice place. And you go in, and it's just like a regular office, and there's some stairs. And you go upstairs, and it's a big, giant library. I don't know how giant it is. Probably, 900 square feet or something like that. It's a library, a big table and computers and everything. And he had these young people coming in. And if they'll go through the 12-week program that he has, he'll send them off for the summer and go to these different functions. He wants to free minds. A few at a time. That's all it takes. And then these people come on as interns. Sometimes they get credit from school and stuff. And I remember different years being ushered around by some of his interns. He takes this seriously. And when I find out that he's going, he's not an ego type. He's not the, I know how to whatever and through me and all the stuff I've done and all that. He understands where we're going. He's hardcore. But he's just, and he kind of downplays his libertarian thing. It's just, where else are you going to go? Who else are you going to associate with? Who else are you going to talk to? Who else are you going to get resources from and work with? Where else are you going to put the kind of stuff that he writes, other than Freedom's Phoenix? This is where we're at. He understands, and he's there to do the best that he can. It reminds me of the scene where you have Benjamin Martin, played by Mel Gibson in the movie The Patriot, and he goes, "No, you petition again." And again, you plead, you beg, you grovel, you whatever, but you don't want to have war. Our children will learn of this revolution by it being amongst our homes. They will see the blood. They will see the bad. Do we want to do that? Of course not. I know some guys are, it's just, I always wanted to, whatever. We avoid those guys. And of course, a lot of those times when you got those guys, they're the infiltrators. They're the guys that you want to do all the hard work. Yeah, go put these signs. Yeah. You get the most, those guys like that, and you put them together, and then they find out they're both working for different agencies, infiltrating or whatever. You think I'm kidding? We've been doing this all, they stopped sending them. Don't matter. I don't want to go do, Freedom's Phoenix or anything that Ernie's doing or the revolution or, the Lovolution or any of that stuff. They make you work. And you got sweat and stuff. They got weights they want put in the attic or something. You know? Because they're always the first ones to come, last ones to leave, the most energetic, and they definitely want to help you with your computer data entry. That's how you know. And they can't help themselves. And if you go to a rally or you're going out a sine wave or something, they're the most antagonistic. They're the ones like thumping people in the chat or something. You got to, whoa, you go over there. No, we're good. They're obvious. Fortunately, with YouTube and communication amongst a bunch of people that, have digital cameras and you can immediately put stuff up and you can get in contact with other people that know the same kind of thing happening somewhere else, you start to see, these guys are. And then there's even access to previous times that they've done stuff. It's very difficult for them to do this anymore. We're in the end game of a whole new era. How we are going to be able to free ourselves. How? Well, the first thing is you need to know that you need to. You got to declare your independence in your own head. And the only way you can do that is to not be dependent. Get informed. Got chickens? Got seeds? Be ready. Here it comes.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
It's more than a feeling. It's a retaliation. Here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. And we got Drew Phillips, one of our videographers, just walked in. They just came from a court proceeding that's going on downtown right now. One of our activists here, Jim Kaiser, if you've been here, I don't know, really in the country, short story, this is what happened. He and his son's mother share custody of him, and it was determined by the boy's mother, he's 9 years old, and the court, they decided that he needed to be medicated. They wanted to put him on psychotropic drugs to he'd be more quiet and still and cooperative in class. Okay? Well, I know the kid, Ben. It's myNameIsBen.com. MyNameIsBen.com. We have a webpage up for him. And what happened was, Jim went through this, and we'd see the kid. He'd come here and hang with his dad on the weekends, and we're doing building and all that kind of stuff. And what would happen is you could see the difference from Friday night to Sunday afternoon. He refused to medicate him, and it was just a stark difference. And he was a 9-year-old boy. He's a kid. He's a normal kid. I have 4 kids, 2 boys, 2 girls. He was normal. It's like, don't play with the power tools. Unless you're doing something. And he'd help his father and do something. It's all good. What happened was, for his mother, it just couldn't, he just wouldn't cooperate with the boring school, I guess. So it was something. So they decided we can keep him in the corner if we drug him. And Jim was opposed to that. So when he had him, he wouldn't take him to school. He'd homeschool him. They didn't like that. Then he goes, I'm not medicating him. And then finally it got to where the court had ruled he's going to lose his parental rights and so on. That's kind of the hearing that we're having now is the one to make up for the one that months ago he took his son and left and went to Florida. Well, they caught him. Became big national news story. It's all big deal because he's saying, I will not sacrifice my son to the state for them to force medicate my normal son. And I'm with him, man. My wife, my granddaughter down there, you know, she's 8 weeks old. And we're kind of, can we not poison their brains? So they made signs all this week and so on for this hearing to go down. I guess it didn't take very long because they're on their way back. Drew got back already because they wouldn't let him into court with his camera. So tell us what happened, man.
We had a good hour prior to the court hearing, and we used the opportunity to stand out inside in front of the Maricopa County Justice Court, and we had signs. They were painted up, and we had a little trifold flyer that we were passing out and just talking to people on the street, and people were pretty interested because he's got some great signs with Ben's silhouette photo on it and some clever slogans. So people were interested in what we were doing, and there were a lot of people, you know, downtown moseying around, and so we got to talk to people, and we were pimping freedom.
You know, the one thing that we got some good artwork. I mean, we come up with some good, they're homemade, you know, but that's even better. You know, they're cool. And a lot of signs, a lot of, you know, Jim's been working this week quite a bit on these. We've been helping. We have a lot of anti-vaccine enforced mandatory shots kind of stuff. A lot of our stuff doesn't even say vaccine on it. Our main sign, it's like, support first responders that say no to mandatory shots. Because we knew they were going to be the first ones they're going to mandate. And then if you got an officer, you know, saying, hey, you know, you're going to get shot too, boy. I did.
Well, the best sign is dare. Does ADHD really exist?
Yeah, I saw that. That was a good one, too. You know, I am really interested in what kind of impact it had in the courtroom, but you didn't get to get in.
No, Shelton and I were thinking they weren't going to let us in with our cameras, so I walked in right behind him, and I was going to film him getting denied. And then we walked in. He set his camera down. They said, sure, turn it on. As long as it works, we'll let you in. And I had to turn back around because all my camera bag was still outside. So we went to the car, and we put the signs in the car and the flyers and all the extra material because we didn't want to lug it all in the courtroom. I walked back in there, and I'm the last one to walk in, and the guy went through the same thing. Says, yup, does it turn on? And I'm putting my wallet on the conveyor belt to go through the machine, and then some big supervisor comes up kind of angrily, and too bad it wasn't recorded because I wasn't thinking about it because they let Shelton in. And he says, no, there's no filming in here whatsoever, period, end of story. And I said, well, here's my press pass that, you know, I printed up for 99 cents at Kinko's. And, you know, they said, no, there's just no filming, period. I said, well, you know, I'd go in and ask the judge and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, just trying to BS with him to get my way in the door. And he was stern about it. No, you cannot film. So I text Shelton and said, yeah, you know, they wouldn't let me in because we'd just gone through this. And he says, well, calls me back. He says, well, I'm coming out the door right now. We'll see what they have to say. So I don't know what he had to say because I didn't call him back. But
so was he filming in the courtroom? Shelton, get that?
I doubt that.
See, a lot of times, the way it works is you have to get permission from the judge.
And he told me specifically, you know, you have to get permission prior. I'm going, well, that
doesn't
do anything.
Yeah, you know, they only do that when they want to. And it's just, we've been through this before. So I guess it didn't take too long. And you heard that Jim's on his way back, so they didn't throw him in jail, I guess.
No, they sure didn't. They're all in the car right now and should be here shortly.
Well, he's got an ankle bracelet on. I mean, you know, because there's two cases here. There's one that's the custody thing, which was going on now, the one that he missed. And then there's another one, the criminal kidnapping of your own kid thing. And I'm going, you know, so we have Mark J. Victor's on that case, and we're definitely covering that and having some fun with that one. But it's not fun for Jim.
Now, the guy's got an ankle bracelet, and he's got to be home at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, he's stressing this one. But he was, in his opinion, he was left with no choice. He went through the entire process. He spent all his money. He's made sure that he loves his son. And he knew what was best for him was not to take these medications. And they have a lot of side effects. You know, that was another thing. He was gone for like 3 or 4 months. And Ben had, over the last 2 years, from 7 to 9 years old, he had actually lost weight and hadn't grown an inch. And he was gone for 3-4 months, and the kid was not the same kid. He came back, sprouted up. This stuff stunts your growth. And his mother, when she flew back to Florida to get him, after they arrested Jim, and then they bonded him, released him, and he's back here, she was like, in the media, wow, I can't believe how much he's grown. You think these drugs might have had something to do with it? So I'm not a big fan of drugging kids. If he's bored in the public school system, that's probably because the public school system's boring. In my opinion.
And maybe they could give him a recess. They don't do recess in school anymore. Maybe if they let him run around for, you know, half an hour, 15 minutes, they'd be fine.
What do you mean? There's no such thing as recess anymore?
They get a lunch, after lunch runaround time, but when I was in elementary school, we got a recess before lunch. You got 15 minutes to go run it all out of you, And that's exactly what, you know, I think it would solve half the problem. These kids get nervous because they've been sitting there for that long. If you ask an adult to sit in a room or a conference or a training thing for 8 hours, they get the same way. They get fidgety. They get bored. They get, you know, they want to, they don't act out, you know, like kids do, but it's the same thing. And so I think if they just let the kids, the public schools in Arizona got rid of recess. Apparently they can't afford, you know, medicine balls or something.
You know, I just get up and leave even at conferences if I'm bored. They're not allowed. You're not allowed.
Well, when you get in trouble, they make you sit in the corner for 5 minutes. That's not going to help either. What they ought to do is just put, you know, if you're acting out, if the kid's restless, tell them to go run a lap. You know, don't, you know, don't let them do whatever. Just tell them to run
just
a lap.
Not even. No, I'm so. It's important to us. And my wife went down there. We're watching our granddaughter. She's our first granddaughter, first
adorable
grandchild. Yeah, she's a cool kid. Donna was down there. Did she go down there with
Oh, yeah,
Kaylee?
She came down. It was a little windy. She hung out for about a half hour, and she split.
And my son and daughter-in-law had our first grandchild, and she's 8 weeks old. And we were very encouraging for them not to vaccinate the kid with all these shots and so on. And what's interesting is my daughter-in-law, her mother is a nurse in a birthing hospital. Yeah, that's what she does, is birthing babies all day. And she was not big, giant opposition to not giving the vaccine. She's like, yep, no, I understand. Didn't give any kind of pressure on it whatsoever. And those shots and everything didn't go on our granddaughter. And she's bright. You know, I've had four children. I know, you know, I call them input babies. You know, it's like Johnny Five in Short Circuit. You have a robot. He just wants more information. Input, input. So I call them input babies. They're looking around. They want input. They want to be stimulated. They want input. And what happens is, you know, then you get to a situation to where you do this to these kids and they don't have the ability to, you can tell in their eyes they're just not there. Hey, Jim just walked in. Go ahead and go in there, that microphone. Go ahead and come in here real quick. Come on. I got, you know, just a minute. Okay, so tell me, you're not in jail. What's up? No, this one right here. Get over here. You're killing time, man.
Well, I didn't have to leave in those pink Maricopa bracelets this time, which is nice. I've had to do that the last few times. So, no, my motion wasn't addressed. The judge hadn't even seen it yet. So all they focused on was child support issues.
Okay, so now they're just saying they didn't strip you of your parental rights or anything. Can you see Ben again?
I still can't.
Why?
I still can't. That's got to be addressed in a later court.
Also, that's all they cared about now is fork over the cash.
Is fork over the cash. And I refused to do it. It was a woman judge. It wasn't our regular judge. And she says, you know, don't you understand that you have this obligation to pay child support? And I explained, I have an obligation to raise my child. And I've always done that. I've raised him. I've supported him by raising him. You know, you guys took that away from me. I have a moral obligation to not send her money to feed my kid drugs. That was my position today.
Oh,
so what they did is they sent me to...
That's not going to go over. So when's the next time you go to court on this?
December 3rd, I go to what they're now calling accountability court, where I'm going to be encouraged to pay child support.
Yeah, no, you're going to jail, man.
Well, who knows? We'll see how it goes.
You know, all right, well, I'm glad you're out now. And now we're following it. Yeah, we're in support, because the bottom line to us is that... Can we not poison the minds of the next generation? There's like it's like an effort. It's in everything. So I'm with you, brother. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, with Wendy McElroy. Oh, a whole hour with Wendy McElroy, and I'll tell you who she is when she comes back. But you don't want to miss this. I guarantee it. We'll be right back.